Protect your dream home with American Family Insurance. And you can weather any storm. You'll also save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote. Find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Accidents can happen, be they plane crashes, alien shipwrecks, motel break-ins. That's why insurance is important. This week's episode of the Bloom Files is sponsored by our friends over at Geico. Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. And I bet it can be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around your home. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com. Truth is out there, and here, who knows? Either way, we are opening up the Bloom Files here on Post Show Recaps, and X-Files First Watch / Rewatch Podcast got a doubleheader for you as we're boarding the plane to take off into the two-episode flight that is Tempest Fugit and Max. I'm, of course, joined by my co-pilot here, who has another reason to add to the list of why she's not going to get on a plane for a little while, Angela Bloom.
Yeah, but I don't really have a fear of flying. Do you?
I mean, I don't, but I would now say I watching this, and also considering that the episode opens up with, you know, that guy, right? Being like, oh, yeah, planes never crash. Of course, I don't think he counted for alien involvement, but
no.
Who does on this show, really?
They should always account for alien involvement. I will say, though, that me and you both had some visceral reactions because there were a lot of babies on these planes.
Yeah, I mean, what I will say is it was a well-done couple of crash sequences that they showed. But the research that I did showed that essentially this two-parter came about because, like, one of their VFX people or one of their production people was like, hey, I built this model of a Boeing plane. And they're like, oh, yeah, we're going to crash that.
Yeah, and then he was like, a rig capable of simulating a crashing plane, basically, is what this guy built.
So they're like, okay, yeah, I guess we might as well use it. You're going to give me the toy. I'm going to play with it.
And that's sort of why they brought back this entire character and all of that sort of stuff.
This was interesting in many ways because it wasn't just Max.
No.
And I know that that's, of course, always great. Spencer talked about this as well in his feedback, is that, you know, we've been dealing so much with, like, the syndicate, cigarette-smoking man side of the conspiracy with the government and aliens and everything, colonization. But now it seems like we're just dealing with more miscellaneous aliens in this case, because this is linking back to Fallen Angel, where it was actually the government was trying to capture the, like, predator-esque invisible creature.
Yeah, so it's a little confusing because I do think they didn't know what they were doing in that early episode with Max.
Right.
And now they have a little bit more clarity about the storyline and all of that, and they're trying to, like, weave him into it. So you can't really go back and say, like, oh, in that episode with Max.
Yeah, like, oh, it really planted the seeds for
what was
to come.
Because, like, the aliens are completely different.
Yeah.
And, like, it's like, yes, they have radioactive things going on, but, like, what does that even mean?
We saw that in Fallen Angel, too, right? Those were, like, the... Because that was the episode where Mulder broke into, like, the military headquarters when they were trying to cover up the UFO crashing. But, yeah, I just thought it was an intriguing thing to go back to all the way back in season one. And I know that the actor who played Max had actually been like, hey, you want to have me back on the X-Files? And they're like, we feel like he was
shady.
Too much of a, you know, too big of a character to bring him back unceremoniously.
Right.
So
needed
then,
to have some, like, clarification.
But then when this happens, that's interesting compared to what they said, right? Because not to say that this was a waste of Max, but look, I'll come right out and say it. I was waiting the entire two episodes for him to pop back up after
he
dies.
No, he's dead.
Yeah, that was
He dies within like the first 5 seconds. The show has nothing to really do with him at that point. It's just more like his legacy.
Which is interesting because I got fooled by the episode title. The second episode was called Max, and you can talk firsthand about the fact that while we were watching the entire time, I was like, yeah, but then he comes back.
Yeah. So he doesn't though.
He doesn't. It's like, I admire the sort of go-get-itiveness of it, because I don't think a lot of shows would do that, especially after going through all this, really holding this character away from the show for so long purposely, and then saying, well, nobody is safe. But I also feel like it was kind of a waste at the same time.
No, it's true. I think that it's like, they did what they could with it, and they felt like, okay, let's use this character to help us crash our plane, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, that being said, again, the plane crashings themselves are very
well done.
Yeah. I mean, they're like visceral, as you said, for a reason, especially when we get like the replay that Mulder provides. But here we have the cold open where I guess we see it play out. I mean, this is a lot of 21st century airport stuff, too, right?
Yeah, we mentioned a couple times that Mulder was doing some stuff that would just not fly. He was just, like, walking into airports being like, I'm a federal agent. Here's my badge that I could have easily faked.
Yeah, exactly. I will say also, I don't know if this, like, is the flight attendant did, like, a first pass with a cart, but is now just, like, walking up all about, not really. Like, I don't know if that changed in recent years. But
I think so,
it was a weird sight to just watch someone, like, walking around without anything to cart around.
Yeah, exactly.
But Max is here. He's got a haircut.
He does have a haircut. I asked you a few times, what do you prefer? Long hair Max, short hair Max? And you said short hair Max.
150,000%.
So I think he looks cooler, but like from a personal grooming perspective, but I think long hair Max is more like the vibe.
Long hair Max, I think when you look at him, you more so get the vibe, right? Of like, oh yeah, this is a guy in his trailer who like plays this weird UFO grungy song on loop. But I just, for his own personal aesthetic, for the actor's aesthetic, I'm happy that he didn't have like the long stringy Chris Elliott in Scary Movie 2
hair. I think that
hair.
Was his hair though. It did not look like a wig.
Yeah, I mean, I would imagine so. Again, if the X-Files has not kept his number in their phone book as to like, I'm going to go out and get a haircut and try to get other jobs. I'm not going to keep growing my hair out to think that maybe the X-Files might bring me back.
Like coughing because I think it's funny thinking about somebody who's like growing their hair out just to get a job on the X-Files.
Exactly. Oh, wait, I have to look the freakiest I am so the X-Files might hire me as a day player. And then from a day player, I become a lone gunman. And then from there, anything's possible.
Exactly. I think that makes sense to me.
So, I mean, Max is a little jumpy. We'll find out later exactly what he's hiding, but in this
Max
moment...
Max is very jumpy.
Yeah, he feels, or he's flighty, I guess, in a manner of speaking. But he feels...
Tempest fugit.
Yeah, he feels in this case that, like, someone's watching him, and someone is. This is a big episode full of, like, again, just, like, you know, faceless, nameless white guys... who represent the big government. We're going to get the main guy is going to be like this Tom Selleck-esque mustachioed man that's going to play a part throughout parts one and two. But here is a bald guy who was saddled, unfortunately, with the duty of tailing Max on the plane and then like going into the bathroom, basically assembling a gun and was about...
Another very sketchy thing that would never happen.
And was about to kill him when everything goes haywire.
Yeah, which was like, you know, typical X-Files fashion for an opening scene where things just kind of like, oh, aliens,
Yeah, exactly. So as we cut back from the credits, happy birthday, Dana Scully.
It's her birthday. Say it's your birthday.
So Spencer said that Scully's official birthday is February 23rd, 1964.
Good for her.
So I guess this episode, I'm assuming, takes place on February 23rd.
It must, yes.
What a sucky birthday now. Like, she's gonna have some pretty traumatic things happen to her.
Well, I don't see Dana Scully as someone who celebrates her birthday, like, in an uproarious fashion. You know, it's like, she probably is the one person that one of those people that's like, don't buy me anything.
So I was confused about this place. So is this like a bar that they frequent?
Yeah, it's like a local pub that like people that go to the FBI or work at the FBI go to. It's in Washington.
Do they show this place often?
Not often, but it is shown before.
But this is different than randomly lighted diner that Skinner was at, remember?
It's possibly the same, but it's never like mentioned that it's the same, but it's
they have a dessert kitchen, but mm-hmm. no, because they outright stick a candle and half a Hostess snowball and give it to Scully as a birthday dessert.
I enjoyed it. I thought it was
Do
cute.
You like snowballs?
No.
Because, yeah, that's why it's like coconut around sponge cake or something.
Yeah, it's not good.
No, that would not be my Hostess dessert of choice, but I'm assuming that also comes from Mulder, so you know that like he picked the quirkiest of all the.
No, it's whatever he didn't pick it. He said it's her birthday. Bring her out something.
But of course Mulder's doing the, you know, oh, I didn't know it was your birthday thing.
Mm-hmm.
I also I'm gonna know if this is a David Duchovny thing, but like he claps well beyond the window for clapping closes.
It probably is.
You know, they sing the happy birthday song, which I did many times back in my days as a server. And then, like, everyone's clapping. And then Mulder claps, but I want to say, like, three times the length of which there was clapping, period.
Yeah.
While he's talking, he's still clapping. It's truly Mulder fashion for him to be just a little off. Even when people are singing happy birthday, he's got to do it his way.
Mm-hmm. And so Scully gets a little giftie from Moldy here.
Yeah, gets a keychain. It's a hefty keychain.
It's like Apollo 11 keychain.
Yeah, but it looks like the size of like, I don't know, the size of like...
No, it's one of those keychains you get like in the gift shop.
Yeah, but I don't know just how that fits in your pocket.
I don't think it's supposed to. It's supposed to go on your keys.
Yeah, it's just chunky.
You don't want one?
I mean, I don't want...
I'm seeing right now on Google that you can buy them. Apollo 11 keychain that Mulder gives Scully.
What's the diameter?
It doesn't say.
All right, I would like a smaller diameter than what Mulder gave Scully. It doesn't have the quote that Scully's going to say at the end of the second episode, right? She just knows Apollo 11 stuff.
She knows her Apollo 11 stuff, and she also, like, is talking about... like how it's significance at the end of the episode.
Yeah, exactly. But at the moment, you know, Scully's like, why did you get me a freaking keychain? That's what you get.
So
like,
it is significant. And I will say that we will see this keychain again.
Ooh!
In season 8.
Season 8. Wow.
Yes. I actually don't
so
know.
They really maxed this one, right? I'm like, oh, no, here's a keychain. Let's bring again it back.
I don't know if we will see that, but I can't remember if we're actually going to watch an episode of season 8 that is relevant at all, but because that's not a good season. But
because that was the non-Mulder season.
Yeah,
right?
It's the Doggett season,
the Robert Patrick season.
Yes. So, but we will. It does appear again, so it's definitely relevant. You know, I don't know. And Mulder says he thought it was a pretty cool keychain. But
yeah,
like,
I was gonna say, like, and she ends up attributing meaning to it, despite the fact that it's something you like. Get your nephew when you go to Cape Canaveral or something. You know,
right,
like, oh,
but
yeah,
I do think
something.
It's like, I do think it's like to Mulder means something because like the Apollo 11 mission is about sort of like sacrifice and not giving up and all that kind of thing. And maybe he thinks like it's perseverance for cancer for her or something. I don't know.
Well, the best gift that Scully gets is a new face in her life by the name of Sharon.
Sharon.
Who at least in this moment claims she is Max's sister.
Right.
Right, because she says that, oh, Max was in communication.
I'm sorry, did we skip Agent Pendrell?
Pendrell? No, because I guess Pendrell's here. But
he's here. He's like flirting. He's being cute.
Well, I mean, listen, he's going to have a much larger role to play. This is the happiest he's ever going to be in this episode.
Probably, though. He loves Scully.
R.I.P. Agent Piscotty, a.k.a. Pendrell.
Agent Piscotty. Such a dumb name.
Well, I didn't mean to. I just, that for some reason, I thought his name was Piscotty.
Why would you think that?
It was a very long day.
Okay.
So Sharon is essentially here on behalf of Max, basically saying, like, oh, if anything went wrong, Max told me to find you. It's very much like a Desmond Daniel Faraday type of thing. And this is where she reveals that, like, Max, quote unquote, didn't make it. But we get that, we sort of get introduced to who Mulder and Scully are going to collaborate with over the course of these two episodes, which is like, it's like the National Transportation Safety Board, right? Like, that's the specific facet of the government they're working with, not the FBI or the CIA or anything like that.
Yeah, so I think it's just like a government agency.
Yeah, well, I think there's a specific.
They do say CSI or CIA. CSI. They say CIA later, so I think it's a branch of the CIA. Maybe?
I think there's a branch of the CIA that deals specifically with like transportation disasters, like plane crashes, you know, train wrecks, etc.
You know a lot about that,
and that's what they're dealing with right here, including this guy. I don't know what his name is, but he starts off a little bit of a jerk.
I'm sure I can find out, but yes, he is a bit of a jerk. And he's just, but to be fair, he's just doing his job.
Yeah, and he has Mulder come in, who he doesn't know from Adam, right? And is like, well, I know you're going to do a good investigation, but please,
Chief Investigator Mike Miller.
Mike Miller.
Also the name of somebody who you broke their nose.
Oh, I did. That's where the name came from. Maybe that's why I don't like him, is because I broke his nose.
He plays FBI Special Agent Tobias Fornell on NCIS. His name is Joe Spano.
Oh, like as related to Jesse Spano, the fictional character from
Saved by the Bell. Okay. I don't think so.
All right, so Mike Miller, double M here. So, I mean, to be fair, when Mulder comes in and says, you're going to conduct a very thorough investigation, I appreciate that. But also, aliens might be involved. Mm-hmm. Like, he deservedly gets laughed out of the room.
Yeah, because, like, this is a conversation you have with him after the meeting's over. Like, you just listen to the meeting. You don't, like, you don't submit your weird alien claims.
Is that
there.
Sort of like an FBI, like, hierarchy thing of, like, listen, I'm a little more qualified about this than you people are.
I guess
so. Let me speak up.
But, like, no, it seems weird. Yeah, this is the National Transportation Safety Board.
Yes, that's an NTSB.
You're so good at that. Mike is so good at saying acronyms.
That's my
like
superpower.
Very quickly.
All right, like here, come up with something. And I'll do it.
I can't off the top of my head.
ICOTOMH.
It's very quick. I have to think about that kind of stuff. Like
it's the most useless power I could possibly possess. Superpower. But I'm an X-Man nonetheless.
You can't find things in our own home, but
nope.
You can come up with acronyms.
Unfortunately, that's my brain. Is like I have to lose one skill and gain another.
He can't find anything.
I have a tough time. You like to throw out the phrase "it coulda bit ya,"
which Mike didn't know was a phrase, and I
still don't think it's a phrase.
It's a common phrase because it's if it were a snake, it would have bit you,
right?
Meaning like it's right in front of you.
But I don't. How often does someone say if it was a snake, it could have bit you?
I say it a lot.
Well, that's because I can't find anything.
So if somebody is that in your life that isn't good at finding things, they probably say it all the time.
Well, now I guess we've thrown that phrase out to people who don't, because I feel like a lot of people don't. But let's go to the plane, because they're not able. If the plane was a snake, it couldn't have bit them because the plane and the snake are gone.
Yeah, the plane and the snake are gone.
Vaporized.
Yes, but they do have they basically have some aspects of the plane, I guess. Like, and they've brought it to a warehouse, and they're like NTSB, NSB, and
yeah, they sort of
NBC.
Like, boom, boom, boom. Yeah, they like start laying out these bodies that they find. We do find that bald assassin guy is like cut in half.
Yeah, and basically, and this guy, a man in black,
mustache man,
steals the zip gun from the assassin's body,
and also
face
like,
and fingerprints with acid.
Yeah, I was gonna say like he just has a little like pest control spigot that they just spray with acid to be like, oh, you can identify who you are.
That was icky.
Yeah.
Like, that happened in the crash.
Well,
doo-doo-doo.
Let's speak of more season one callbacks, Angela, because Mulder finds out through looking at some wristwatches that the people on board the plane lost 9 minutes.
They lost that time, baby.
I mean, so Tempest Fugit, this is one of my favorite episode titles yet.
Yeah, so you didn't even get this until we started talking about the episode title, because I was like, I don't remember what that means. And you said it means time flies. And it's pretty funny.
It works on so many
because
levels.
Because they were flying. And time was also moving backwards.
And you could also say, like, time flies and that it's been a while since they've seen Max.
Yeah, and you can say time flies because life is fleeting.
In a very sad way, I guess. Yeah, that's probably the most...
Don't forget, Scully has cancer.
I guess that's true. Yeah, they're not going
to
talk about...
Her nose bleeds every 15 minutes, just to remind you.
And Mulder
you.
Just got her a keychain for her birthday, just to remind her about that.
That's it, though.
Yes.
His best friend that has cancer, he got her a keychain.
So, Sharon... You know, they do a little bit of a deep dive on Max, because they're like, oh, Max is here. What's been going on? I think they'll find out in a few minutes that Max is dead. He ain't coming back. They like zip him up in a bag and everything. Mm-hmm. But they find out that since we've last left Max, like three in the past 3 years, he's basically just been on the run.
Yeah.
I don't know if this is due to him feeling like he's being pursued or just him being like super all over the place.
Yeah, like a manic person.
But one of the things that this is going to be, of course, the typical Scully line of thinking is that, like, what did she say? He worked at an energy plant where they handle uranium and plutonium. So like a la Back to the Future. He stole plutonium from the Libyans, and now they're after him.
Yeah, Scully's saying that he must have taken something radioactive with him on the plane, because all of the people have burns, especially the guy that was sitting next to him who's still alive, actually.
Right, he was for like a hot second, yeah. They found him in the wreckage, but then they said, like they said after the commercial break, that he died, so.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, Scully's like, yeah, no, he definitely brought something on board, and this is when Sharon's like, oh, BT Dobbs, I'm not his sister.
Yeah, So, I mean, but this is also when, they're going to find out about Sharon.
Yeah.
That's in the next episode. Here, she gets abducted.
Oh, right.
She's just hanging out in her motel room, and then bright light comes, door gets blown off the hinges.
Mm-hmm.
Mulder also, you know, he is a little lingering around this Max idea, because he finds his card on Max's body, and so he's like, there's something here.
He was coming to see me.
Something must have happened. And so we get a typical, you know, back and forth. I do like a Mulder, why can't you accept the facts? Because there are no facts, Scully.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, that's basically what the little warehouse argument is, essentially, is that Mulder, surprise, surprise, is insisting, no, aliens were coming for Max here. And Scully's saying, I know I've seen a lot, but I draw the line at that.
Yeah, and Scully's also like, but why would they have Max's body then? Like, he would have been taken.
Yeah, but Mulder does convince Scully to stay on board with this emotional plea, right? He's like, we owe it, you know, they lost 9 minutes. We owe it to all these people who died and their families to find out what happened in those 9 minutes.
All right. I don't disagree. But it's also, like, not a great plea for Scully. Yeah. I mean, she's heard that before.
And I think at this point, Scully's like, sure, like, as much as I might deny it, I'll go along with what you're saying, Mulder.
Right, and after all the wristwatches have also been taken from all of the bodies.
Yeah, so after Mulder saw that 9 minutes lost, like, they basically all got confiscated.
Yeah, so it was like, that's proof for him.
And so now we're going to bring in a new facet into all of this. Again, maybe a bit of a callback to Fallen Angel is the military.
Uh-huh.
So we're going to be meeting with Sergeant Frisch. Is going to be...
I don't remember.
Such a doofy name, that guy. Sergeant Frisch. Sergeant Frisch was like the air traffic controller.
Wait, but his first name is Lewis, and I just have to tell a little anecdote about how I was interviewing a candidate yesterday.
Okay.
And his name was also Lewis, but I picked up the phone and I said, hi, may I please speak with Luis? Like, as if he were French. And I said it in a way like, Louis?
Yeah, like, oh, hello, Louis.
And I was like, I'm sorry. May I please speak with Lewis?
Bonjour, Louis.
And he hung up on me, so I had to call him back.
Wow.
So and I had to say, I left him a voicemail and said, I'm so sorry, I said your name incorrectly.
Wait, so do you think it was a prank phone call that someone was calling?
Yes, I think he thought it was a spam call because I
interesting.
Even though he was expecting a phone call from a recruiter at that time. But anyway, that's my little anecdote about Louis.
I mean, to be fair, you were also selling him some weight loss supplements, so.
Skinny tea.
But flat tummy tea.
Flat tummy tea.
Exactly. Oh, that would be, I was going to say that maybe the X-Files could tackle that, but they also did come back in 2016. So I would not
and
be.
And I do feel like that's a little bit of a Doctor Who ripoff.
Yeah, because there was that, the thing where like the fat jumped off and like became its own species.
Which was like such a gross episode.
Yeah, but I do feel like X-Files tackling MLM would be an interesting concept.
Is that next on our post-show recaps rewatch
Doctor Who?
Yeah, I feel like Josh is like talking about how all he does is rewatch shows of rewatches, and we gotta watch Doctor Who. It's gotta be one.
I think it depends. I think, you know, maybe specifically like the Christopher Eccleston through Matt Smith.
Oh, yes. No, we're not going back and watching the ones from the 60s.
No, but I'm also meaning, I don't think like, you and I have watched a fair amount of the Peter Capaldi stuff, and I don't think it's our jam, so.
I got through the whole thing, and I got to the Jodie Whittaker stuff, and I really like Jodie Whittaker, but then there was a point where I didn't have access to it, so I dropped off. It's very hard to watch like in real time because it doesn't air. And yeah. then you have to like wait and then you have to, I don't know. But anyway, this is not a Doctor Who podcast. This is an X-Files podcast.
All right. Well, let's get rid of the timey-wimey-ness. And, mm-hmm. and well, I mean, there's timey-wimey-ness again happening here with there the disappearing is. Time. But for right now, the military involvement is that this guy, Sergeant Louis Frisch, he was the air traffic control guy who is like, because I guess this plane flew into military airspace. Yes. And so now there's a bit of a mystery where he's saying like, oh, nothing happened. When it turns out that the truth, and he's going to end up revealing it, that basically, like, he was tasked with being yeah. told to bring the plane down.
Exactly. Which is wild.
yeah. And so, again, like, he initially denies it, but then we see that the guy that was sitting with him, this was confusing. The guy that he was...
Just a colleague, I guess.
Was it a colleague or was he in? Was he also one of the air traffic controllers?
I think he was also one of the air traffic controllers, but like he's arguing with him over whether they should tell about what they
Yeah, and so
did.
And so Frisch is like, we have to lie.
So I think both of them did it.
Yeah, well, like, both of them were in the room.
Yeah.
But there's a scene where Frisch like goes to visit his partner and yes. his partner is dead.
Right.
And I'm still wondering whether he killed himself or if someone killed him and made it seem like a suicide.
I think someone killed him and made it seem like a suicide.
Are you sure? Is that too much like a Mulder brain? Like, oh, it's a big conspiracy.
I mean, there's no answer. They don't tell you.
Yeah.
But that's my thinking.
I don't know. Cause then in that case, why would Frisch get pushed to do like the exact opposite thing then? Right. Cause like, that's going to be the reason why he goes to Scully.
It's for sure a faked suicide.
You think so?
Yeah. But why it was done is like still kind of questionable.
Yeah. But meanwhile, Mulder and Scully are going to be distracted by the fact that Sharon's gone and the door has been blown out. We get, of course, typical thing of an X-Files two-parter in particular. Mm-hmm. Mulder and Scully are up for inordinate amounts of time. I believe they're up for like 36 hours at this point.
Yeah, and they also are spending a lot of money again.
Yeah, because they're...
something to track.
Yeah, because they go visit Sharon's motel room, right? And they're like, how are we going to... I don't know if this is covered by insurance. They're like, yeah, we'll take care of it. We're the government.
Yeah, they spend a lot of government money on their X-Files endeavors.
Yeah, and so this is going to be... we're going to get a little bit of a separation mm-hmm. first, but after Frisch sort of tells the truth about what he did, they go to Mike Miller about mm-hmm. it. Mike Miller doesn't believe him at first, but then we get like a car chase happening.
Yeah. Well, Miller tells him at that point that the door was pulled off the plane from the outside while it was in flight. I think he mentions that too.
Yeah, well, because Mulder's going to present this theory and he'll bring it up at the beginning of the next episode that yes, Frisch may have talked about how, okay, you know, this plane might have blown this other one out of the air, but Mulder believes, due to that fact, that there was actually a third aircraft,
yeah.
aka a UFO, that showed up and sort of like, you know, surprised everybody, and right. that then an abduction attempted to happen, and then, you know, the plane gets shot out of the air.
Yeah, so it destroyed the second aircraft that the air traffic control people were sending after the first aircraft
yeah.
and then caused Flight 549 to get stuck and crashed.
Yeah, exactly. So
what a mess.
It's a big mess. Before they can head out to investigate, though, they're going to get into a nice little like car chase.
Drive under a landing plane.
Yeah, very Fast and the Furious yeah. where Mulder decides to really risk it all. This is, I guess, the airplane equivalent of driving on the railroad tracks like right before the train crosses through?
I guess so.
Driving under a plane that's coming in the opposite way.
Yeah, it's a little bold.
It's very bold. I wonder how they filmed this scene.
I don't know.
But essentially they decide to separate here.
Yes.
This is when Mike Miller like is investigating. I think he's investigating Flight 349, right?
549, yeah.
And he finds Sharon.
He does.
And then Sharon. A big ass bright light from a UFO shines down on him.
Yeah, exactly. And encounters the UFO.
Yeah. And he, for all the denying he can rightfully do, now he has seen the real deal, mm-hmm. essentially. Then Mulder is going to go for a little bit of a dive, go for a bit of a swim to see if he can find any wreckage underwater
of this third aircraft.
And then meanwhile, Scully is going off with Agent Frisch to sort of interrogate him Sergeant Frisch, I'm so sorry. Back at the bar.
Yeah, which is wild. Why would you bring him to the bar to investigate? But I guess she thinks that he's being hunted by the government, so she doesn't think anywhere is really safe for him.
Yeah, but at the same time, I mean, I can understand it because Spencer pointed this out to us. This mustachioed man like incredibly bold of him.
Yeah.
To in a crowded bar. Cause like, you would imagine we've seen this time and time again in this show in particular. If you need to take someone off the board, you do it carefully and you do it quietly. You don't do it in a bar full of so many people.
But I guess the issue is that this guy, it's like probably not worth his life to.
Right, he's going
to fail.
He's going to express that later on when he gets on the plane, right? Of like, well,
my
hey,
life
if I,
doesn't matter.
If I die, it doesn't matter as long as it furthers the cause.
Exactly. So he's like, doesn't care. But also, so this is where Agent Pendrell gets shot.
Yes, and he really was just like caught in the line of fire, right? Like he's flirting with Scully, nothing doing. And then Mustache Man comes in and like holds up a gun. Scully holds up a gun and like a couple of meat shields go down and one of them is Agent Pendrell.
Yeah, it's really upsetting.
It's sort of the loss of innocence in that way, yeah, right? Because again, he was just happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time.
And he's such a good guy, always helping Scully out.
Yeah, I'm assuming there's someone to replace him though, right? Much like Deep Throat was replaced by X.
I think that Agent Pendrell is the only one that I like remember from a name perspective. I think they're all just like unnamed scientists.
Yeah, like
now.
Random CSI yeah. guys that are toadies that are going to help Mulder and Scully.
Yeah.
Well, we end this episode with blood leaking out of Agent Pendrell and a secret leaking out from underwater as Mulder finds a dead ass alien body.
He does. So he arrives at the crash site basically underwater and it's already being investigated. And then he finds the alien body and then the bright light shines.
And then that's the end of Tempest Fugit.
Tempest Fugit!
And so we're going to displace in time maybe about 30 seconds to a minute. When we come back, we'll talk Mac. But for now, here comes the bright light as we hear a word from our sponsors.
Since J&K Security Solutions opened in 1987, our attention to detail and customer service have been our strongest assets. I'm President Jeffrey Beckman. We'll always do our best to find the most efficient and cost-effective solution to every job we tackle. Whether it's security for your home or business, installing video surveillance, or being able to control your garage doors from your phone, we can help you feel empowered with simple and user-friendly technology. Let's work together to secure your home or business. JKSecurity.com. Since J&K Security Solutions opened in 1987, our attention to detail and customer service have been our strongest assets. I'm President Jeffrey Beckman. We'll always do our best to find the most efficient and cost-effective solution to every job we tackle. Whether it's security for your home or business, installing video surveillance, or being able to control your garage doors from your phone, we can help you feel empowered with simple and user-friendly technology. Let's work together to secure your home or business. JKSecurity.com.
All right, we're back. We're coming up from the water to take a breath and get into Max, even though Max is not in it.
Max is not in it. Well, his visage is in video.
His Michelle visage.
His visage.
Exactly, Louis. So we start things off, again, in a pretty intense way, because Mulder's going to come up like, oh my God, what was that? And then realizes, oh yeah, I'm being chased down now in a wetsuit.
Mm-hmm. Not good.
No, it was a weird sequence to start the episode, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Like, because he's in a wetsuit, there's no real high-intense Jason Bourne-esque stunts you can do. It's more so he gets out of the water, plods along the road for a while, and then a Jeep catches up to him and takes him at gunpoint.
Yeah, exactly. So, and I don't know how far he thought he was going in a wetsuit, but not far.
Not very far. And then we cut back, unfortunately for Angela's sake, to dead Pendrell. And that's not all the blood being shed, because Scully's nose is bleeding.
And also, this is when Skinner arrives, too.
Right, exactly. Basically saying, like, hey, I'm here for Frisch, because basically he said that, oh, the military is putting him under arrest, claiming that he provided false testimony.
Yeah, and she's like, he's testifying against the military. Like,
yeah.
We can't give them to the military, they will kill him.
Exactly, like, no, you can't put him, if he doesn't want to be eaten by tigers, Don't take him to the tiger cave.
Exactly.
But he does, even though I don't believe Frisch doesn't die, but he's not in the rest of the episode, right?
I don't think so.
Yeah, so I mean, remember the assumption is that he gets unceremoniously killed off camera.
Yeah.
So Mulder is luckily able to, like, despite all the run-ins this guy has with the military, he's still able to get off pretty scot-free. Maybe it's, again, the power that he wields, but it seems like they always take him, give him a light slap on the wrist, and then Scully comes to bail him out.
Yeah, exactly.
And so they're out. Now they're trying to figure out, like, what's going on. Mulder's going to catch Scully up about the underwater wreckage. It should be noted that Mulder has sort of, like, from a wardrobe perspective, fallen apart as well. Like, he doesn't even wear a tie this episode. His shirt's untucked.
I like it. It's rugged.
It's very rugged. And I guess, you know, if he just got thrust out of his wetsuit and into a random change of clothes, like, maybe this isn't even his clothes.
Yeah, I think that he probably just found something, like, I don't know, in a tool shed.
Tool shed?
You know, like in the, like a, I don't know, like a boathouse.
Maybe, yeah. Maybe he just sort of grabbed a change of clothes out of a boathouse.
Yeah. I don't know, I'm just thinking about it now.
Now you're just thinking about if a change of wardrobe would exist in a boathouse. Certainly not in a tool shed.
Yeah, probably not in a tool shed. Maybe a boathouse.
Unless, like, I don't know what you're getting up to. Maybe if you feel like you need a change of clothes on hand, there would be in some sort of marina or something, but not in a tool shed.
Okay, moving on.
This is when we find out that Sharon isn't Max's sister.
Right. I think she mentions it earlier, but I do think the point is driven home here.
Yeah, that she is, she's a former aeronautics employee, basically, but she met Max when they were institutionalized together.
Yeah. Okay, cool. That's right. Great.
Now, I'm assuming the aeronautics experience came before that, though who's to say?
Yeah, not, I feel like this is like getting too deep into your work makes you a little crazy type of thing.
So they're going to go visit Max's old stomping grounds.
Right.
And so do you remember?
AKA his trailer.
Yeah. And was this the trailer that they saw in Fallen Angel?
Yeah, it's the same trailer. It's his trailer. It's his house, but he just takes it wherever he goes.
Right. And this is a trailer park where you just like sort of hitch your wagon and you hang out.
Because it's like a Silverstream.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so the usual, you know, crap is festooned in it. There, we talked about this before, like a grunge song about unmarked helicopters is playing in the tape player.
Yes.
but the big to-do is the fact that Max videotaped himself. He's got the old nightcap cap on.
He probably has a little GoPro attached to that nightcap cap.
Yeah, you think so? You think?
Well, that was my question about how he got this this military recovery video. Like, was he clearly there videotaping it, but like, was he dressed as one of the like he was right up next to them.
Oh, right, you're talking about Fallen Angel. Yeah, when they catch him.
No, this episode where they're showing a video of him at the crash site. How is he taking that video?
Well, what's that part of the video though? I thought that was just like a VO over the sequence where it was like because he's just filming himself talking about, oh, I went through this experience. I'm expected to be abducted again at any minute. No one's believing me.
Yeah, but it's still a video of, like, a crash site.
No, I thought it was just a video of himself talking, and then while he's talking, and as he's saying, like,
but how did he get that video?
What video?
The video that they're watching.
They're just watching him talking.
No, but there's a video of them finding an alien.
No, that's in real life.
Oh, okay.
That's Max is just talking to the camera about how there's a government conspiracy to cover up aliens. And the thing is that we see them doing just that.
I see. I thought that he was taking that video. And
no.
I was like, that's a very close encounter with the people.
No, it's sort of like his like almost last will and testament. I don't know if he thinks like, oh, just in case, you know, I get brought down for being the man who knew too much. But yeah, it's basically like what he's saying is confirmed, and that we see the stuff that Mulder found before the military brings it up and essentially wipes it out.
Okay.
Including the mustache guy.
Yeah, no, you're right. Okay.
And so with that, despite Mike Miller having seen a UFO, he calls off the Flight 549 investigation. He said they put over 3,000 hours into it. So I guess my question is it 3,000 hours cumulatively? Or did they spend, because I guess, no, it has to be cumulatively, right? Because now I'm thinking like 24 hours a day. That's like 100 days. And I don't think 3+ months have passed.
Right. And I think that they also are very much so used to doing this.
Yeah. Like all hands on deck.
Yes, exactly.
Just put your nose to the grindstone. And basically, Mike Miller begrudgingly kind of says there's no evidence right now to suggest anything
That's
other
it.
Than
it's done.
That military narrative
yeah.
of, oh, it just happened to be, you know.
Wrong place, wrong time.
Wrong place, wrong time. Exactly. But on the DL, he does decide to listen out. Mm-hmm. You know, he's listening in on Mulder's theories about Max here.
Yeah, so is this where he shows him the thing in the trunk?
No, so this is where we get sort of like Mulder's description of what happened.
And yes, we see a little like in play.
Yeah, like the pseudo flashback, as it were. Again, it's not a complete flashback because it's from Mulder's perspective, but basically he reasons that Max would have realized he was immediately in another abduction scenario and basically saying like, well, Max got abducted for those 9 minutes, got put back, and it was the military fighter plane that was in the wrong place, wrong time, because it fired upon the UFO and essentially sent everything into a tailspin.
Yeah, so the UFO was just returning Max to the plane.
Yeah.
And they weren't doing anything like...
Well, no, it took Max
and then was bringing him back.
And then bringing him back.
And when they were bringing him back, the military airplane struck and killed everybody.
Yeah, exactly. Because it was like, what's going on? I've got a fire on everything.
I've been military, man.
So we don't know if what Max experienced was this. Yes. I will say Mulder is a very vivid storyteller, considering we see Max.
I usually think when they show flashbacks that are from another person's perspective, they're at least partially put in truth.
Yeah, but I mean, Max has like a conniption.
Yeah.
Before he gets, and then he gets pulled out of
seizures.
This plane on wires. Oh, right. I forgot about that. Yeah, the anti-seizure medication.
Yeah, so he was, I think, probably just having a little seizure.
Yeah, and so we see, again, this pretty brutal plane crash happening with everyone screaming as the plane goes down.
Yeah, exactly. Not great. I didn't like that part.
But this is when Mulder decides to present the smoking gun, as it were, the NICAP cap.
The NICAP cap, which... is Mulder presents it?
Yeah,
no, this is where Miller gives it to Mulder.
Oh, right, Miller finds it in the trunk.
Miller says there's one thing that they found that had radioactive presence, and it was this hat.
Yeah.
And a luggage claim ticket.
Right. And so
they get that in the mail.
Yeah, because Mulder's gonna go Scully's gonna go talk to Sharon, who has been institutionalized again.
Right.
Following her traumatic experience, Mulder's going to go to the trailer, which has been ransacked.
Yeah, and also talk to the guy that owns the trailer park, and he's like, do you want this guy's mail? Are you going to get rid of this trailer?
Yeah.
Go away.
Please get out of here.
Yeah.
And so this is when you spoke about before, that Mulder, you know, is going to go to the airport and say, oh, I believe you have my luggage. Do you know what it looks like? No.
He says, I think it's a small bag. And he goes, small bag, big bag, can't remember anything.
I'm sorry, I don't remember the entire bag. Like, again, if he did not present who he was, if you're an employee of the airport, like, do not give this to this man.
So, first of all, that's the first point. He gives him the bag regardless of that, knowing who he is.
Yeah.
And then when Mulder realizes he's being stalked by the goons, he tells the guy who gave him the bag, like, I'm a federal agent. I need an exit.
Yeah, basically, like, let me through your secret door into the terminal.
Yeah, basically, he says, I need an exit into a secure exit into the terminal. And the guy's like, all right.
Well, because, and so let's rewind a little bit, because the bag is so important, because when Scully interrogates Sharon, she claims that there was something big, important, and radioactive
that she stole from the employer.
For Max. And essentially it was apparently alien technology.
Yes.
They separated it into three parts.
Uh-huh. Max had one.
Max had one. She had one. But both parts were taken.
Where'd the third part go?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure where that third, maybe the third part.
She does say like there was one part which she had, one that he brought on the plane, and a third one. But, like, she doesn't say what the third one is.
Yeah, I mean, that would be pretty important. I feel like even when you get those two parts together,
The third one is the one that Mulder picks up at the luggage claim ticket.
Okay, so
one was on the plane with Max.
Oh, so one went down with Max.
Yes. Sharon has one, and Mulder now has it in the bag.
Yeah, so I wonder if the mustache man was able to scavenge that, or if that one piece of technology got destroyed when the plane crashed.
I'm not sure, but then Mulder does something truly wild here. He gets on a plane with it.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Mulder.
He just cavalierly goes to the airport return to Washington with it.
Because he wants to test. Well, first of all, he wants to GTFO.
But yeah.
To that point, you could also be like, just drive. But no, he wants to test it.
I think
it.
He does want to test
and
it.
And I know we talked about this, actually, when we were watching, right? That, like, Mulder is someone who, when he sees that tempting offer in front of him, like, he's never going to stave temptation. Unless he's really, really forced to. So if he's like, this weird thing that can make you possibly get abducted by aliens? Okay, let me trigger it and see what happens.
Wild. But that also, the mustache guy goes with him.
Yeah, the mustache guy's able to fly him on. And we sort of get it at gunpoint, right? Mm-hmm. Where, like, Mustache Man sits next to him and Mulder holds a gun.
He's like, where are you from?
But this is when the Mustache Man goes into this entire monologue, right? Mm-hmm. About having to sacrifice yourself for the greater good. Apparently, his dialogue was inspired by, like, a speech that Orson Welles gave.
Okay.
I mean, that does make sense, right?
But this very intense monologue.
Very intense, very dramatic, very heavy. But still, you know, in this case, Mulder is able to trap him in the bathroom.
And again, comes out with a gun.
Yeah.
This guy was able to get on a plane twice with a gun.
Yeah, well, no, that was the bald guy the first time. The
but
mustache
still.
Guy. Still, this organization... Whoever, I guess this is like the military, whoever they hired.
They know how to get guns on planes.
Yeah, they're able to really fashion some great firearms out of nothing.
So
really
crazy.
MacGyvering it here. And so basically, you know, Mulder, despite Mulder's best evasive maneuvers, then all of a sudden...
UFO.
I legitimately was like, how the hell is he going to get out of this one?
Yeah, but the UFO, as we realize now, was never in it to, like, destroy the people. They just wanted the device back.
Yeah, which is why it took Max. It didn't take Max because it's like, oh, yeah, you're a person of interest. It was, you have this thing.
Yes, and they meant to return him, and they do the same
with
Mulder.
Which is why they went to Sharon as well. It's
because
it's like, oh, we don't want you. We just want our stuff back.
And so Mulder appears, and he's missing 9 minutes.
Yep, and the Mustache Man is gone.
And he's gone, too.
He gets taken out. Again, it's like super sloppy. That's mm-hmm. fine that he ends up losing his job here. Though Mulder, you know, smarms here. Oh, he got a connecting flight because Scully and Skinner, right, are gonna show up at the terminal trying to figure out what happened.
Because he said he had the guy. He was like, I'm on the plane. I got the guy.
Meet me at the airport.
Meet me outside.
And so Mulder and Scully decide to bequeath Max's stuff to Sharon,
mm-hmm.
Which she's grateful for. And Scully has to sort of memorialize her own dead in her life because she basically is like wondering out loud, like, wow, I did not even know Agent Pendrell's first name.
No, but I think it's fair.
It was Biscotti.
Don't speak ill of the dead.
I won't. I wouldn't say it wasn't even a sacrifice. It was like, again, wrong place, wrong time.
Poor Pendrell. But Scully's just like, I feel bad.
Yeah, and she finishes with this big final speech about how you can never forget, like, as much as we always memorialize those who are at the end goal, we can't forget those who made sacrifices along the way. Exactly.
Yeah.
One small
true.
Step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
Apollo.
11.
Mm-hmm. Space.
Space. And that's Tempest Fugit and Max.
Woohoo!
Yeah, so it's interesting. I feel like when we talked about Memento Mori, who said, this is one episode that feels like it could have been two.
This is two episodes that definitively could have been one.
I completely agree. I think that it wasn't that I didn't enjoy these episodes. I just sort of questioned their existence.
Yeah, so here's the thing. These are not of my top favorite episodes in the X-Files ever. I just feel like they are important to the overall arc from a perspective of Max and the alien abductions.
No, I liked after meeting him that it was good to like come back around.
Yeah. And I think that like, yes, we could have done a different arc. We could have done, you know, whatever, but I feel like
going to Russia.
I think it's important for us to have talked about that. So what's next, Bloom?
What's next, Other Bloom, is that we are going to keep going with some arc episodes. This wasn't really an arc episode. It wasn't Monster of the Week, but I feel like...
What, the ones we just watched?
Yeah, like they were arc-y. They were arc-adjacent.
Arc-adjacent.
Because they weren't connected to the main arc, again, like colonization.
Yeah, no, it had nothing to do with it. It was kind of just like aliens.
All right, so we are going to be doing two episodes, a few episodes after the conclusion of Max. Mm-hmm. We've got episode 21, Zero Sum, and episode 23, Demons.
Yeah, so I think people are going to be like, why aren't you doing Small Potatoes? We're just not. Sorry.
Yeah, I know we got a couple things about that. Apologies. Listen, this is our rewatch. Maybe if we do, like, when all this is done, if there's like
we'll go back and watch some, like, heavy hitters.
Yeah,
that
if there's like a wraparound episode of, like, here are some miscellaneous Monster of the Week episodes that you missed, maybe we'll do that.
Because I think when we're doing a rewatch of a whole series, like, there are stuff in these other episodes that Mike needs to know. Otherwise, he will not understand what happens in the future.
And I heard that Small Potatoes was, like, the rare comedy episode in season
four. It's kind of funny. They got tails.
The baby's got tails. But yeah, we're doing Zero Sum and Demons. So these are two arc episodes, but they're separate. Right?
They are separate.
It's not a two-part arc episode.
No, it's not a two-parter. They're just tied to the overall mythology of the X-Files.
Okay, that's exciting.
Yeah, and then we'll finish out season four the following week.
I know. I can't believe we're all again. Like, this is the sort of the height of the X-Files,
yes.
Right?
So. Well, yes. Depends season four and season five, really, I love season five.
Oh my goodness. Well, then I cannot wait to get to that, but we've still got a couple weeks. So again, next week, season four, episode 21, Zero Sum, season four, episode 23, Demons. If you have any thoughts about that, of course, email us, bloomfiles@postshowrecaps.com, xfiles@postshowrecaps.com, like Spencer does, like the great birthday boy, Brennan Fitzpatrick, does. We're excited to hear your thoughts about these episodes in season four at large. Tweet us, @AngePelagi, @AMikeBloomType, @PostShowRecaps. But other than that, I always forget about the spook of the week until the final seconds, and now I'm Mulder, and I'm just gonna keep on clapping.
Yeah, please stop clapping. I don't know. I guess Max?
No. How about Sharon?
Sharon, yeah, she's spooky.
And she's spooky, and she was unfortunately drawn to, like, this weapon,
I think she's,
this weapon heist.
Not only is she spooky, but she's somebody who just, like, needs to, like, take a real good look at herself in the mirror.
Yeah, there were no mirrors where Sharon was at any point in time in this episode. Maybe it's because she's a vampire.
Uh-huh, maybe.
A collusion between the vampires to steal alien technology that the government's trying to cover up.
No.
All right. Maybe I need to watch more X-Files so I can wrap my brain around it. Again, next week, Zero Sum, Demons. Thank you all for listening. Until next week, case closed.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.